This episode of The Orb is brought to you by Audible.com, offering the largest selection of audiobooks for your smartphone, tablet, and desktop. To get a free audiobook of your choice, visit audibletrial.com/trekfm. And also by Enterprise in Space. Find out how you can help science and education and become a virtual crew member aboard the NSS Enterprise Orbiter. Visit enterpriseinspace.org for more information. And if you'd like to help us keep Star Trek discussion coming to you each day, consider becoming a patron of the network through Patreon. Visit patreon.com/trekfm and find out how you can become part of the team. That's patreon.com/trekfm.
This is J.G. Hertzler, General Martok on Deep Space Nine, and you're listening to Trek FM.
Welcome, Niners, to another episode of The Orb, our dedicated Deep Space Nine show. I'm Christopher Jones, and with me, as he is every show, is my esteemed co-host, Matthew Rushing. Matthew, it's been quite a while since we recorded. How's everything going?
You know, Chris, things are going well. It's busy. You know, I feel like life is just really, really busy. And, you know, I don't have a problem with that at all. But, you know, podcasting and just in general, people have visited us. We've gone hiking and camping. And it's just, yeah, life is rolling along. And before I know it, it's going to be next year already, I feel like.
Oh, definitely. Yeah, it's so, so busy. Speaking of which, I do want to mention, and normally I don't like to get into these things at the top of the show, but I know a lot of people stop the podcast when we head into the closing, so I'm going to mention it up here. The Orb has been very infrequent recently, and that's not because we're planning to stop the show or anything. It's just, you know, Matthew and I are having a really hard time lining up our schedules to record. Most of you know that I live in Japan. What you may not know is that there's a 17-hour time difference between Matthew and me.
Yes.
That's difficult to deal with by itself. Also, I spend more than 4 hours per day commuting back and forth to work. So I am not home at all during the week, Monday through Friday. Just a few hours total, you know, at night, and actually about 20 minutes of free time at night. So I can only record on the weekends. And Matthew is usually traveling on the weekends these days, and so it's just really hard for us to line up a time, but we're trying to work that out and get the Orb back on a regular schedule for you. That may mean that sometimes Matthew may do some shows without me here, because we do want to bring the Orb to you guys on a regular basis, so just hang in there with us, and we're going to get things back on track.
Well, and I wanted to let everybody know, we're definitely working and racking our brains trying to figure this out for you guys, because we both love doing it. And so thank you for bearing with us and for your patience. And I hope that will continue, as we're confident, I think, that we've got some things figured out now. So we're crossing our fingers, both of us.
Yeah, absolutely. I think we're going to get it worked out. One way or the other, we're going to get the Orb out to you guys more frequently, even if it means that I'm not able to be here every episode. All right. Well, Matthew, the reason I'm here today is that I saw an unusually large number of owls flying by, and I followed them, and they led me to you. And that can only mean two things. Either a group of founders with a bizarre fetish for shape-shifting in the form of owls is planning to invade the Alpha Quadrant, or it's time to open the Orb of Mail.
That, or there's just a ridiculous amount of mess to clean up, you know, if you're following that many owls.
So I think that's a given either way.
That is probably true, but yeah.
Which does lead us into a topic about the founders that we've never covered before, but I think we'll save that for another time.
That does feel like another show. So.
Right. All right. So we have two topics today, two key topics from our feedback that you guys have sent in. One is Zial and Dukat. We got a bit of feedback from our show, Dukat's Little Secret. And the other is about Deep Space Nine Season 1. And this comes both from mail we've received and from a post in the Babel Conference. So we're going to kick things off here, Matthew, with Zial and Dukat. And Claire W. in Australia writes to us, regarding your latest podcast, Dukat's Little Secret, and of course that shows you right there how long it's been since we've recorded The Orb, because it's been quite a while since we did that episode. But Claire says, I agree that Dukat is fairly consistent in his self-serving motivations. Can think of the odd exception, however, that's another issue. My interpretation of his breakdown when Zial is killed is this. He wanted so much to believe himself to be this grand hero of Bajor. Zial, not having known him at that stage of his life, when he was doing all these horrible things to the Bajorans, is one of the few people who respects him and believes the false persona he has set up for himself. When she dies, that crutch dies also, and so he has to face the fact that he is not the hero that he so desperately wants to be. It's been a few weeks since I last saw the episode, but from what I remember, Dukat didn't seem close to breakdown when he was looking for her to evacuate. He actually seemed in his element in battle. It all changed when he found her. That's my 10 cents worth. Love the show. All right, so Matthew, what are your thoughts here on Claire's take on Dukat and Zial?
You know, I really like her thoughts. The idea of her kind of, you know, being this crutch, and in a lot of ways, her having not known the other side of Dukat, he has been able, I think, to create his image for her, you know, and the way he's treated her, obviously, is never been, I mean, horrible, except for that one time where he was going to kill her and then he didn't. So, yeah, this I really like Claire's thoughts here, and I think that she has some really great points. And I really do. When you're thinking about the psyche of Dukat, I like this idea that he himself, I mean, you can see it. He's built himself into this person, this persona in his own mind. And that really has, I think, affected him in so many ways. And so, man, I think Claire just nailed it. And I really, this is now part of my headcanon when I am thinking about Dukat and Zial and all of these issues. I think she's got a great point here.
So you see the existence of Zial as supporting Dukat's belief that he is some sort of hero to the Bajoran people.
Yeah, I do. I think that he's able to use her to play out in his mind that he is more of a savior type person than he actually was.
Okay.
Yeah, I mean, it's a whole weird thing. I mean, this is one of the most complex and strange characters to talk about, because there's never really an up or down with Dukat. You know, it's like way beyond three-dimensional chess. We're talking like
it's like four-dimensional.
Yeah,
omnidimensional chess.
Yeah,
I'd like to see them portray that on screen.
You think Spock would be good at omnidimensional chess?
Maybe. I think Q would be better, though.
That is true. Yeah. You definitely win against Khan, because he can't even think three-dimensionally.
Hey, so. It reminds me of, getting off of Dukat and Zial for a moment here, the comic that we discussed on Literary Treks, where we had a chess game between Q and Trelane.
Oh, gosh. Yes. Ah, classic. That's classic right there.
Well, let me tell you, my take on this, when I think about what Claire wrote, is it's similar, but maybe without the hero part, because I do agree. I think that Dukat does see himself as a hero to the Bajoran people. I totally agree with that. I think where Zial is concerned and when she dies, it could also be in part that the existence of Zial is a way for Dukat to justify in his own mind that the things that he did during the occupation weren't so terrible after all, because she's a product of that.
Yeah. Yeah.
And when she dies, when that's gone, and again, as Claire says, that's a crutch. when that crutch is gone, it sort of suddenly rushes into him that the things he did were terrible, and maybe mm-hmm. he does have some regrets, and he just has this meltdown. Now, of course, he overcomes those later and still sees himself as this grand hero to the Bajoran people. But in that moment of time, I think that she did represent to him a way to see that the things that he did weren't necessarily so terrible after all.
Yeah, I mean, it's not so bad, you know. And it could have been way worse, which, I mean, Dukat is always
saying. We're not saying that. We're saying that's right. What he's thinking in his mind.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Is that Dukat is always thinking that, I think, even in his mind, like, oh, if I hadn't have been here and he says this, it would have been so much worse, you know? So,
right.
I like a lot of what Claire is saying here, and I think it's really good. I do think it's kind of going to be part of my Dukat headcanon now.
All right. Well, Brad Alexander in Virginia also wrote in about this topic. Now, Brad likes to send us messages sometimes when he's in the middle of a show, which is interesting.
Yes.
So he says, hey guys, I'm just spitballing here since I'm still in mid-episode, but I wanted to get this to you while it was on my mind and before it died of loneliness. So Brad, thank you for getting your thoughts out to us while they were fresh, and please accept our apologies for taking so long to actually respond to you on the air about these. So we appreciate that. Brad says, on the subject of Dukat and Zial, I agree with Matthew. I don't think that he felt anything for Zial. I think, and Matthew, you'll have to think back to what you said at the time, which I know is very difficult. But he says, I think when she said, I would rather die than be apart from you, if Major Kira weren't there, he would have said, as you wish, my child, and killed her. Although that sounds a little bit like Kai Wynn might have been killing her, right? As you wish, my child.
Yeah, but it does seem like, it actually does seem kind of like something that Dukat would do.
Yeah. Oh, you know, like, action, absolutely. The wording of my child kind of remind me of Wynn. Okay, Brad goes on and says, and then he would come up with some ritual reason why he had to do it, a reason that revolved around him, such as this was a mercy killing of a half-Bajoran who would have been rejected by both societies. Okay, so let's stop there for a moment, Matthew. What do you think about that? And do you remember what you said back at the time?
Man, you know, what Brad is saying is very interesting here, because I do remember what we were talking about. And my argument, I think, really had been that, you know, if Kira hadn't been on that trip, if she hadn't kind of forced herself to go on that trip, mm-hmm. Dukat would never have thought, given a second thought to killing
his
daughter.
Yeah, I remember you saying that. Yeah. Mm-hmm.
And so, and I could definitely see him, you know, giving some sort of line. And then if somebody found out, having to make up some story to make himself feel glorified in it, you know, because that's really just kind of what he does.
Mm-hmm. Yeah. Yeah. I think there's a very good chance that that is what he would have done as well. So I think Brad is probably right here. Okay, let's go on. Brad says, and let's take the argument a step further. We know he had relations with more than one Bajoran woman during his tenure as prefect. So what if he arranged for her transport to suffer a mishap? Here's another question. How many other offspring might he have fathered? I have a hard time believing that he had just the one. And yeah, I do too. Could he have systematically eliminated them and his mistresses in order to keep them from coming forward and ruining his marriage and or position? His position would be endangered, at least in his mind, if any of them came forward with evidence of his, if you'll pardon the expression, indiscretion. Yeah, I see what you did there, Brad. Especially after the occupation, when he couldn't keep them under his thumb. As prefect, it would be fairly easy to do and make it appear to be an accident, especially if they were made to look like accidents.
And that's I think that's actually a really interesting thought. You know, the idea of Dukat, you know, this is not the first time that he's, you know, messed around with a Bajoran woman. And this isn't the first time that this has happened. I think that's a fascinating idea. And it makes complete scary sense to think that Dukat may have killed other women or children that he had because he didn't want anybody finding out. That, especially when maybe somebody got too close to them finding out.
Yeah, so, exactly.
Goodness, that just it seems right in line with Dukat and what we know of him.
Yeah, it absolutely does. Yeah, I'm pretty sure it did happen before.
Yeah, which is even scarier, honestly.
Yeah, but not surprising.
No, not at all.
Not at all. All right. And then Brad signs off with, thanks, guys, for all you do. All right. Well, Brad, thank you for listening to every episode. We really appreciate it. Okay, Matthew, let's go on to the next topic we have for the show today, season one. So this was a discussion that came up in the Babel Conference over the past week, posted by Floyd Dorsey. But before we get to Floyd's question, we also had a message from Sam Harrison from the UK talking about two specific episodes in season one. So Sam writes, hi, Matthew and Chris. I'm making good progress through the Orbs backlist. This week, I reached the halfway mark, and I'm pleased to report that the show continues to amuse and provoke me as much as ever. Among the installments I've listened to over the past few days was number 43 on Move Along Home. It didn't encourage me to revisit that episode, but it, right? But it did send
That's
me...
shocking, Chris.
Well, remember, Matthew, if you remember, our goal was to encourage people to go back and watch that as if it were a TOS episode.
That is true. Yes, so, that is yes. true.
So Sam says it did not encourage me to revisit that episode, but it did send me back to season one more generally. Okay, so there was something good in there for you. The two of you often, and rightly, identify Emissary as the strongest pilot of any of the Star Trek TV shows, but you sometimes, I feel, underplay the strengths of the rest of the season. Your shared love of If Wishes Were Horses aside, I often get the impression that you think it only really starts to become DS9 proper with Duet. But against that, I'd like to set the storyteller and progress. Both episodes have always lingered in my memory, and rewatching them this week, I feel that's because they're also strong character pieces. The former does much to establish the friction between Bashir and O'Brien that will eventually become a bromance. All odd couples need tension, after all. While the latter arguably does as much for Kira as the episode that follows, as well as foreshadowing events in Shakar. And both make Bajor a more multifaceted world than it's hitherto appeared to be. They're also decent stories for Jake and Nog, whose perpetual adolescent boredom is arguably Trek's best portrayal of childhood. Yeah, I don't think there's any argument there. Indeed, if it wasn't for their need to make their own fun, we might never have been introduced to the self-sealing Stimbolt. And Matthew, I don't know if my fandom could go on without the self-sealing Stimbolt.
I honestly can't imagine Star Trek without the self-sealing Stimbolt. And yeah. I feel like so many episodes would be just utterly ruined if that wasn't a part of the Star Trek canon.
Well, you know, we named our TNG show on the network Earl Grey because the T has such a prominent role on the show. What people don't know is that we almost named this show the self-sealing Stimbolt.
It would have been nice, but, you know, the orb just has a really nice ring to it.
Yeah, the problem is that the title was too small on the cover. We thought no one would be able to read it, so yes, we decided to go with the orb instead. All right, so Sam goes on. I wouldn't argue for a moment that season one isn't the weakest season of DS9, but I do think it's the strongest first season of any of the shows, TOS excepted. Okay, so I'm glad he said TOS excepted, because I do think TOS season one is probably the strongest season of any of,
yeah,
of
wow.
the series.
Yeah, wow, TOS season one is, wow, that is just, that's a kick butt.
Yeah.
It's, I mean, there's nothing that's really bad about it. It's incredible for a first season of just any show, honestly.
It does end with Operation Annihilate.
Exactly.
But other than,
it's got fantastic flying, pancakes. I mean, come on.
Fried eggs, whatever they are.
Yeah.
Yeah. So, all right. Anyway, Sam says, perhaps you've already covered this, but if not, maybe it's worth an episode. Keep up the good work, Sam. All right. So, I mean, what do you think there, Matthew, about the storyteller and progress. I think that Sam's correct in saying that we feel that DS9 becomes DS9 proper after Emissary with Duet and then in the hands of the prophets. Now, that doesn't mean that we don't think that there's value in the rest of season one, but I think the tone of the show becomes what we think of DS9 as being with Duet. Yeah. But because the storyteller for me feels like a TNG episode. It completely feels like a TNG episode. I could see that episode with the TNG characters, especially because O'Brien's the centerpiece of it.
I can see what the argument is, though, in that, yes, it could be a TNG episode, but having it set on Bajor and having, you know, the bracelet have a piece of the orb,
yeah,
it does kind of set up a nice mystery of, okay, what are these people all about? You know, we're starting to get introduced to the Bajorans and who they are and their culture and everything like that. So I do think that there's some real validity to the episode in that way. Mm-hmm. And then, of course, he rightly points out as well that you've got the whole frustration between Bashir and O'Brien, which is, I think, really good in that episode. It really comes across that O'Brien does not like this guy, and Bashir would honestly pretty much do anything to kind of get him to like him at this point. So, yeah, I could see that being a good addition. And I can see what both of you are saying, but I do think it has a little bit more DS9-ishness, if that's a word, to it than I maybe gave it credit for in the beginning. So,
yeah, I mean, I can see that. And it does help to flesh out the Bajoran people a bit. So that's something. I think if it were on TNG, they might still do the same thing. Mm-hmm. We would just never build upon it. Like, we might still learn a bit about these people and their culture a little bit. And we might find out that the bracelet is part of some kind of object that's important to them.
Right.
But we would just never build on it. We would never come back to it. So it's kind of a half and half for me, I guess.
Yeah, I can definitely see that. But I think it is nice that you do get the opportunity because it's, you know, it's not just an alien race that we just stopped by and then we leave.
Yeah.
You know, that actually will come to mean something later on when, you know, you're watching the episode or you're watching further episodes and then you kind of think back, oh, man, that's really interesting. Are there other pieces of this, you know, these orbs out there like that? You know, I think it raises some really interesting questions, especially as you work further into the series of Deep Space Nine. So that they honestly never really go back and talk about. So,
yeah,
but yeah, I think that's really interesting.
Yeah. Yeah. I think that there's certainly validity to it in a way that will lead us into our next question here when we're going to talk about, you know, which episodes of season one are really important or not. But for me, at this point in time, it still doesn't feel like DS9 proper for me, but definitely it does have some important elements in it. And also, let's not forget, it's a Star Trek episode that gave us one of the all-time great names for a band, Dal Rock.
Oh, yeah. I'm still waiting to hear that somebody has named a band right. that. And that they're performing like at, you know, Star Trek Las Vegas, you know,
yeah,
one
that
year
would be
or something.
Cool,
yeah, it'd be fantastic.
This year, opening for 5-year mission is Dal Rock.
Dal Rock.
Dal Rock. They'll rock your world, Bajoran style.
Rock your world, Bajoran style. I hope everybody's got their earring on tonight.
You forget your earring and the bouncers won't let you into the concert.
Oh, yeah. There's no way you're getting in without the earrings. So.
And Ro, she's not getting in either because she's got it on the wrong side.
Oh, they really frown on that.
They really do. Yeah. All right. So what about progress? What do you think about progress?
You know, progress is, I think, much more Deep Space Nine. And I say that because it is really dealing with the issues of the Bajoran occupation and what it did to those people. And I think it gives us a real insight into the psyche of these people, especially Kira. And I think it's a pivotal episode for Kira because it is it's showing us, I mean, if you watch that episode and then you watch something from, say, season 6 or 7, the vast difference that you get there is really incredible. So I think that, yeah, he is right on in saying that this is a big deal. And I'm glad that he mentioned it. And it's, it'd be really interesting. Actually, Chris, it might be just an interesting thing for us to just kind of go back and look at, that episode in general.
Yeah, I think it would be.
And, you know, do a little commentary on it or something.
Yeah. I agree more on this one than I do the storyteller, because this is really important to how Kira sees her role and how she's coming to terms with having fought in the occupation and now they're free, and then how are other people reacting. I always thought that this one was kind of odd that there is a moon orbiting Bajor. And we've actually talked about this. We did a whole show called There Are 14 Planets. That there's this moon that basically looks like the same environment as the planet. It's kind of odd. I mean, it's not impossible that that exists out there, except I would expect those types of moons to be around larger planets, not, you know, a planet with the exact same environment.
Yeah, so yeah, definitely.
That was a little bit odd. But yeah, I think this is an important episode. And yeah, I might could be persuaded that this one is a start of DS9 proper. I will say, however, that in contrast to the storyteller, this episode gives us one of the all-time worst names for a band, the No-J Consortium.
Yeah, I don't. That just doesn't really roll off the tongue, does it?
It really doesn't. I mean, like, they have trouble selling out. No one wants to come. They try to play free gigs at bars, and the bars give away free drinks, and they still can't get anyone to come.
Well, so, and then, you know, you go into like a Half-Price Books or something, and their CDs are just lining the shelves, right? You know, because they can't even give them away, basically.
Exactly. Yeah. All right. So that is progress. Yeah, I can see that one. Okay, so let's go on to the Babel Conference discussion that we had recently. Now, this is a question posed by listener Floyd Dorsey, and Floyd posted, "Babel Conference delegates, in particular Niners. I'm about to start my second ever DS9 rewatch, and I would like some advice from some people I've come to trust in issues regarding Trek. Season to season, it can be overwhelming to watch every episode, when we all know there are some you can skip, and there are some you should never skip. I used an online review guide to help me avoid the weaker episodes the first time through." And he gives a link to this site called jammersreviews.com. "This time, I would like your opinions about the episodes in Season 1 that I can avoid, and the episodes that are must-sees. Maybe Jammer has it right, but I wanted all of your opinions, since it seems like I've come to know you over these last 9 to 10 months here on Babel." Okay, so thank you for posting this, Floyd. And of course, we've already had some discussion in the Babel Conference, but since it fits in with the topic of Sam's letter, I wanted to discuss a little bit more here. First of all, Matthew, one thing I completely disagree with Floyd on is the statement, it can be overwhelming to watch every episode when we all know there are some you can skip. I mean, first of all, for me, if I love a TV show, it's never overwhelming to watch every episode. That's why I'm watching the show in the first place. I also don't think that there are episodes you can skip in a TV show. You know, maybe like if you're watching Seinfeld, although I'm rewatching Seinfeld right now, and I've mentioned this before, I think, on here, I'm amazed at how much they refer to previous episodes. And of course, you don't need to know what they're talking about for it to still be funny, but you get more out of it if you've actually seen those episodes and you know why they're making the reference. And also, there are some you should never skip. Yeah, I think there are a lot. I don't think you should ever skip any episodes of a show. And as I posted in the Babel Conference, when it comes to DS9, you should never skip any episodes, even in Season 1, because as you can see from what we just talked about with the storyteller in progress, there are important little elements in every episode that will come back at some point. And if you didn't see that episode, you're going to have a lesser experience watching the show.
Well, and this is something that is really interesting about Deep Space Nine. And it actually has a lot in common sometimes with, and strangely enough, Harry Potter, in the sense that, there are a lot of things that J.K. Rowling would drop into a book. And then in about two or three books later, that subject might come up again. You passed over it when you first read it. You didn't think anything of it. You know, you had no idea it was going to actually mean something. And I think that's what's so interesting about Deep Space Nine is they kind of do the same thing. They don't have a master plan like Rowling did, but they are very good at creating ideas that will allow them to build on later and can be picked up. And so, you know, if you do skip some episodes, especially if you're doing a rewatch, you might kind of miss some of those little tidbits that really make a rewatch worth doing. You know, that's one of the things my wife and I just finished a rewatch. It was a rewatch for me and her first time of the Clone Wars series that they did. And it was great for me to get to go back and watch the series again and pick up all the things that I didn't notice the first time.
Exactly. Yeah.
And if you don't watch every episode, then you might do that. Now, if you're somebody who's on a continual rewatch, you know, you like, I just finished What We Leave Behind, and now I'm back at Emissary. You know, there may be times I think where you might skip a few episodes here and there. For me, I would have no problem skipping Prophet and Lace. I'm not going to lie. But that's the only episode of Deep Space Nine that I can really endure skipping.
All right. What about Times Orphan?
Ooh, gosh. You just named another good one.
Which are, I think, back-to-back, right? they are back-to-back episodes.
You're right. Yeah. So there are two episodes that Chris and I could heartily endorse you skipping.
Right. So for me, I mean, if you're doing your second ever rewatch, you really need to watch everything. Now, I've seen DS9, I don't know how many times, but even if it's my fifth or sixth or seventh time through, I still notice things that I didn't notice before. Because the more you watch it, the more you're watching for little details because you already know the overall story. And it's amazing sometimes when you're watching an episode that you think's a throwaway, and then you go, oh, he just said so-and-so. Now I remember in season six, when this happens, that's where that was set up. I never noticed that before. And for me, that's part of why I rewatch stuff in the first place, because I want to have a richer understanding of the show.
Exactly. And it's the same thing with, you know, movies and books. And so, you know, we go back to the things we love because we find more and more reasons to love them. And I think that's what's really great about, you know, doing a rewatch. So, yeah, I'd encourage anyone, if you're doing a rewatch of any show, especially like you said, Chris, if it's the second time you're watching through, definitely watch every single episode.
Yeah.
If it's your third, fourth, fifth time, I think at that point, you're going to find the episodes that you know what happened there, but they're not your favorite and you can skip. But yeah, if this is your second, third time through, you know, just try it all again and pick up those things. Really, maybe even dig in to say, I'm going to watch this rewatch with a specific desire to watch the Kira arc.
Yeah.
And just really pay attention to her character, you know, and that's what's great about Deep Space Nine is you've got 20 some odd characters you can do that with. So plenty of rewatchability there.
People will find it amusing if they've listened to the network for years and know how I feel about Pulaski. But I'm planning at some point when I can find the time to do it, I want to rewatch TNG season 2 specifically just to watch Pulaski to find out, do I really dislike this character as much as I've always felt I have? Or is there something there that I can say, okay, now I get the Pulaski character?
Well, and that's, you make a great point there, Chris, because I have, you know, been listening, obviously, to the guys over on Mission Log, and it's been very interesting to hear their opinions of as they're watching through with Pulaski, and it does kind of make me want to go back and really dig into the Next Generation, because I'm going to be honest, it's been a hell of a long time since I've watched through the Next Generation just because of, well, I mean, you know,
yeah,
with doing this show and everything else I do, it's hard to find time to sit down and watch.
Like really sit down and watch through.
Yeah, you know, exactly.
For me, TNG, I grew up with TOS, but TNG is the show that I tend to just put on when I just want to have Star Trek on. I just put on an episode of TNG because you don't, it's not like DS9 where it's, you know, you have to really worry about this intricate thread that's running all the way through so many seasons. You can just enjoy, you know, each standalone mission. So, all right, well, let's do this just to talk about whether we kind of agree with this Jammer's reviews site really quickly. And as I mentioned earlier, I think maybe sometime we'll do a show on season one where we go through every episode. And to do it properly, we might need to do a two-parter where we go through every episode and talk about the important elements that you might overlook. But for right now, Jammer's Reviews gives star ratings on what I personally feel is kind of a bizarre scale of 4 stars. I don't know why you don't do 5 stars so you can double it and get to 10, because then he has a chart where he explains, he converts his 4-star rating into a 10-star rating, which seems kind of unnecessary.
That seems very strange.
Math intensive, but okay. So he gives Emissary 3.5 out of 4 stars. So I don't, it's not clear looking at the site what is an episode you should skip and what should you not skip. So I'm going to assume that if an episode gets 4 stars, obviously it's a must watch. If it's 3 stars or more, you really should watch this. If it's 2, you could skip it probably, because he doesn't give anything less than 2. So if you're supposed to use this guide as a guide for episodes that you could skip, I have to assume 2 stars is something that you could skip.
Yeah, I would think so. But that's really interesting. It seems like if you were going to go through all this trouble, why not just say, skip it?
Yeah.
Skip it real good. You know what I'm saying? Like, just make it easier on everybody and say, skip this episode. You know, like, why even do the ratings thing? I just feel like we should just say, you know, watch this episode, skip this episode. It just seems like it would be easier for everyone involved.
Yeah. Now, I will say that if you really want to dig into his stuff, if you click on the episode name, a lot of them have a post by someone named Elliot, which is a breakdown of every act, and they give a star rating to every act. So just for example, and we're not going to do this for every episode, but for Emissary, the teaser got 3.5 stars, Act 1 got 2.5 stars, Act 2 got 1 star.
Oh, goodness.
And then Act 3 got 0.5 star as well, where we get the scene with Quark, Sisko, and Odo, which... it's kind of strange because, I mean, that really sets up those characters. I think all 3 of those characters get a lot of very important establishment in that act.
Yes.
And
yes,
so this person's given it 0.5 stars out of 4 stars. Okay, Act 4, 2.5 stars. Act 5, 3 stars. Act 6, 2 stars. Act 7, 1.5 stars. And that's where they're talking about linear time. Which for me it's the core of the entire concept of not only Emissary, but of Sisko's journey through the entire series, in fact. And it's for me one of the most moving parts of the entire episode.
Yeah, it really is probably the crux of the entire episode and what will come later for Sisko. Like, his entire arc as a character is really built on that whole conversation. Mm-hmm. So that's very strange.
It's quite strange. Act 8, 1.5 stars, and then the epilogue, 3 stars, and then something they call episode as a functionary, 3 stars, and then they give it a final score. Now, this is a different person. This is someone else posting. So this person actually gave Emissary 2 stars out of 4 stars, which to me is absolutely dumbfounding.
Well, yeah, I guess it is proof positive that you can't please everyone. And,
and everyone has their own take on something, so yeah.
Yeah, and two, you know, I mean, I have a friend right now who's making her way through Deep Space Nine really for the first time, and she is in season 6, and she's just now kind of starting to see it come together. Really just hasn't worked for her, and she's a huge Voyager fan.
Okay.
And TNG fan. And so, you know, Deep Space Nine is very different, and it just it doesn't capture everyone the way that it does us.
I can understand like getting into season six and then it starting to fall into place for you. I think that happens for a lot of people, but I think that then those people go back and they rewatch it and then they come to appreciate the build up to that.
Right.
Yeah, because it is not as focused until you start getting around that point. So I can definitely see that. Okay, so quickly, let's just run through. Emissary, so Jammer's review is proper, the actual owner of the site, gave Emissary 3.5 stars. Past Prologue, 3 stars. A Man Alone, 2 stars. So I'm assuming they're saying you can skip A Man Alone, where a man that Odo sent to prison comes back and commits a murder on the station, and then Odo is the suspect, and everyone starts mobbing him. I think that episode's very important for Odo's character development because it really helps establish how he's an outsider and what he has to deal with.
Yeah, that's I think that is one of those episodes. And again, if you're rewatching season one, you do start to pick up that they are planting these interesting seeds for where, you know, these characters are going to go, what they're going to use to build off of later on down the road. So, yeah, that's interesting.
Yeah. All right. Babel, 2.5 stars. This one, I'm trying to think what's in there. I think the extent to which the terrorists went, the freedom fighters went to battle the Cardassians comes out here. This is a very kind of a TNG-ish episode. If you take out some of the elements of the Bajoran resistance, you know, you could see something like this happening aboard the Enterprise. It's, again, I don't recommend skipping any episode, so I'm not going to say you should skip this episode. I think it has a less character development to it than, say, something like A Man Alone does, however.
But hey, Chris, they did give Captive Pursuit 3 stars, which I would agree with, because that is an excellent episode, especially for O'Brien and really kind of bringing the first fruits of the Gamma Quadrant, the strangeness that can come out of there. You just never know what's going to come through the wormhole. So I like that episode a lot, actually.
Yeah, and I saw someone else mention, and I think it was probably in this thread on the Babel conference, most likely, mention a lot of things that were established in Captive Pursuit, that there were ideas that were then used later on.
Yeah.
Maybe not necessarily for the same characters, but they were ideas that resurfaced later in DS9. Q-less, everyone knows how we feel about that episode. I still think you should watch it, but if maybe at least so you can see Sisko punch Q.
Well, yeah, and then have Q be like, Picard never punched me. Yeah, that's definitely worth watching, I think.
It also helps set up Quark and the kind of person Quark is at that point. And I think that's important because when we talk about how Quark changes over the course of the series, if you skip a lot of these early episodes, you don't see the Quark as much, who's just completely devious and in it for profit and doesn't really care about anybody else at all.
Well, and you know, this is the episode that firmly shows just how different Sisko is from Picard. And I think a lot more like, I think he's a lot more like Kirk in this episode specifically. Yeah, I feel like Kirk would probably just have punched Q as well.
Oh, he definitely would have. Yeah.
Or maybe giving him a nice karate chop.
Yeah, right. Right to the back. All right. So let's move on here. We're getting short on time. Dax, 3.5 stars. The Passenger, 2.5. Okay, The Passenger is when a dangerous killer dies in an apparent accident. But the security officer providing his transport to prison believes the criminal's consciousness may have yet survived. On the next Deep Space Nine.
Yeah, The Passenger is not my favorite of season two, but
season one.
Definitely not something to skip, I don't think. Now, I don't know if we might agree. This episode, Move Along Home, got 2.5 stars. Here, I think if there was any episode in season one that I thought you could skip, it might be Move Along Home.
I don't know. I don't think you can call yourself a niner if you haven't watched Move Along Home. It's the Spock's brain of Deep Space Nine.
I'm not saying that you shouldn't see it once.
Yeah. Okay.
I'm just saying you don't necessarily need to put yourself through that pain again, because you will be singing that stupid song in your head.
Well, I was going to say, what if you have forgotten the lyrics to A la Moraine and you need to rewatch it so that you don't screw up the lines, you know, when you're teaching it to your friends?
A la Moraine, shoot me in the brain. I don't want to sing the song again.
Right. Okay. So the Negus, 3 stars, Vortex, 3.5, Battle Lines, 3. Battle Lines, really important for Kira, I think.
Yep.
Really important. I mean, as an episode, I agree with a 3-star rating, but I think that within the context of DS9 and character arcs, it really is an important episode.
Yeah, I do too.
The Storyteller, 3 stars. Progress, 3 stars. If Wishes Were Horses, 2 stars. If you don't watch Wishes Were Horses, then you'll never know how Sisko got the baseball. And the baseball
that
becomes its own character on the show.
It really does. So, and I completely disagree with this rating, but Wishes Were Horses has a really special place in my heart. And I actually think it's a fun, interesting episode.
It is. I love
it
myself.
Of course, I also have a baseball on my desk.
You do.
Because of
and you often
that episode,
hold
so.
It while we're recording the orb,
I do. So. I do. So,
you know, I do think If Wishes Were Horses is one of those very TNG-ish episodes, but I just have a soft spot for that episode as well. And it does give us some insight into the characters. The Forsaken, 2.5. And I mean, any episode, the episodes with Lwaxana Troi on DS9 are really good episodes. And this is the one where they're trapped in the turbo lift.
Mm-hmm.
And this
episode
does more for Lwaxana's character development than all of her appearances on The Next Generation combined.
In fact, all of her appearances on Deep Space Nine will do that in general.
Yeah. This is a great episode.
This is the beginning of that. Yeah.
This is a great episode, and I don't agree with 2.5 for this. Definitely watch The Forsaken.
In fact, I think, you know, they've got dramatist personnel.
Mm-hmm.
2.5.
2.5, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, that's, I don't know, but Duet and Hand of the Prophets, these are both 4-star episodes.
Yeah, and they gave Duet 4 stars. They gave In the Hands of the Prophets 3.5, but that's a 4-star episode as well. Mm-hmm. Yeah.
So honestly, Chris, what we just talked about, this is one of the most watchable seasons, I think, a first season. I mean, I definitely think it's a much stronger season, first season, than TNG's.
Oh, no doubt. Yeah.
I mean, and we only mentioned one episode that we could say possible skip, which is Move Along Home. Unless you've never seen it before, this is your first time through
and
the
then
series,
you have to
and
watch
then you
it.
Need to see it. Yeah, you need to see it.
You can't get your Niner patch until you've watched Move Along
That is
Home.
True. That's absolutely true. You got to get, well, and you actually get the special A la Moraine patch. You forgot about that, Chris.
Oh, yes, right.
So if you make it through all of Move Along Home, there is a special patch just for you. Unfortunately, it sings.
We need to get Aaron on that. that needs to be a real thing.
It does. It totally does.
Oh, man. Oh, okay. Man. All right. So those are our thoughts on what you should watch or should not watch. I think for me personally, when I do a rewatch, I watch every episode. I never skip an episode, even if it's my 8th time through a show. But I know time's limited. Some people want to go through faster. I think that as you have rewatched a show many times, maybe you start to skip some of these. But your first couple of times through, yes, please watch all the episodes. All right. Well, that is the Orb of Mail for this time, but it's not the only thing we've been discussing here on the network recently. So here's a quick look at some other things you may have missed elsewhere on Trek FM.
Previously on Trek.fm, Standard Orbit.
I also like how they're like, here's some random stuff. Let us have one of your people. Like, they think that this is actually, like, a fair trade. Like, here's some ugly shield. Take it and let me have one of your best friends in the world. Like, what is he going to do? Yeah. Hang that up on his wall and be like, this is better than McCoy.
Earl Grey.
You know, what the dressing up and what the clubs and the meetings and the podcast, you know, all really comes down to is just finding and talking and being around other people who enjoy something that you really enjoy.
The Orb.
I'd like to see the Borg assimilate for Ingenar, and then they would become bankers. You know, I could see...
Oh my gosh,
I could see
bankers.
Drones. Yeah, yeah.
The world's
strictest bank ever. Right. I'm sorry, you have not paid your loan. You will be assimilated.
The nanites go into you.
Yes.
To the journey!
You could say that the Equinox does get destroyed, but Captain Ransom lives. And since he is the highest ranking officer that's alive, he assumes command of Voyager.
I hate that idea. The ready room.
I do like that he just drops out of the sky naked. That is the perfect way to introduce Q. And then I love, just before we cut to the credits, they get this great shot of him looking up at Picard, and he's like, hey, what up? You know, right. A little flirty. I love it.
Commentary, Trek Stars.
So I think it actually fits into Quantum Leap continuity somehow. I don't know. I'll have to go to Pubala.com and see what they say.
Don't you dare try to make me feel obligated to watch NCIS.
The 602 Club.
But I loved the scene with Lucy and Tumnus when they first meet, because mm-hmm. that's a very vivid description in the book. And I felt like they really nailed that in terms of the way it looked. And the CGI was advanced enough so that James McAvoy really looked like he had fawn legs. And
literary treks.
Tell us about coming up with this story for the crew of the Enterprise. Where did it come from for you, and what were some of your inspirations for diving into these characters once again?
Well, Troublesome Minds was such a book that it left me with, as if I didn't quite finish. I'd come up with Troublesome Minds as an idea. That the idea was, what pushes Spock toward Kolinar?
Axanar, the official podcast.
There is more to life than just get up, go to work, come home, watch TV, go to bed, repeat until dead. There's more to life than that. And I believe that that's the essential magic of Star Trek, is that it says... It appeals to that urge to get up off the couch, walk out the front door, and go see what's out there.
And introducing the newest addition to the network, Women at Warp.
Iman is fabulous, and I quite like Martia.
Yeah, me too. She's a fun character.
Yep. Also, you think Kirk would be happier about kissing himself.
Right?
It was his lifelong ambition.
Yeah.
I don't know. I more feel like it's his lifelong ambition to kiss Spock, but maybe that's just me.
And that's what else is happening on Trek.fm.
So check out all of these shows and find out what else we're talking in your favorite corner of the universe. You can find our shows everywhere that you get your podcasts. Of course, we're on iTunes. We're also on SoundCloud, Stitcher, TuneIn, Windows Phone. We're on Spreaker. You can go to the website, stream from there, grab the RSS link, download the audio file, and hopefully, Matthew, we will soon be on Spotify.
Oh, that's really cool.
Spotify announced recently that they're bringing in podcasts. And I think that's fantastic, because that's going to get podcasts in front of an audience that maybe doesn't listen to podcasts right now.
Oh, that's going to be great. Yeah.
The company that hosts our media, the wonderful company Libsyn, who has been a great friend of the network, they are the largest podcast hosting company in the world. And they have been working with Spotify to help get podcasts into the system. And they're just bringing in podcasts very slowly, bit by bit. And we are in line to be one of those coming up fairly soon, I believe. I don't know the time frame yet, but hopefully you'll be able to get this through Spotify as well, if that's how you listen to your shows right now, to your music or whatever it is that you listen to.
Wow, that's fascinating, yeah. Chris. I'm excited.
It's very exciting. And I'm really glad that they're doing that. And I'm really glad that Libsyn has been supporting podcasters so well and helping make that happen, you know, not only for us, but for everyone out there who's podcasting. So if you are, for now, if you're there in iTunes or you're on Stitcher, please take a moment and leave us a rating and a written review. We love to hear what you think about the show. And also, those star ratings and those written reviews help us rise up in the search results, because that's how the search engine in iTunes works. So please take a moment and rate the show and review the show. We do have one new review, Matthew, and this comes from Myopic Eagle. and Myopic Eagle wrote, "Better than a holiday in Lucarian City."
Well, especially after, you know, the Jem'Hadar were done with Lucarian City.
Yeah, so, yeah. You wouldn't get your holiday before that happened. All right, so Myopic Eagle gave us 5 stars and wrote, "With a series that is so diverse and wide-ranging, it can be difficult to find a podcast that handles the nuances of DS9 in an enjoyable and effective way. The Gentlemen of the Orb handle this challenge with aplomb. Very highly recommended." Short and sweet, but we really appreciate that. And that's what we're really going for, you know, finding Niners who really want to hear us discuss those nuances and really dig into the series. So Myopic Eagle, I'm assuming that's not your real name. We're very glad that we're connecting very well with you. So please hop over and leave your own review for us. And another way you can help us out, if you would like, is to become a patron of the network. We are a listener-supported network, so we do need your support to keep our shows coming to you every day of the week. If you go to patreon.com/trekfm, that's patreon.com/trekfm, you can set any amount that you would like to contribute on a month-to-month basis. And every little bit helps. Even $1 really makes a big difference for us. It all builds up and makes it possible for us to produce and host and distribute the shows, which do cost quite a lot of money. And we thank all of our wonderful patrons who are supporting us already. We'd also like to thank our executive producer here on the network, Norman C. Lau, and our associate producers, Ruth Ward, Will Wynn, and Ken Tripp. We really appreciate all your support so very, very much, and that makes it possible for the Orb to get opened and let the light shine out. So thank you again for all your support. And if you want to help us out, again, patreon.com/trekfm, patreon.com/trekfm is the URL. So if you'd like to share your thoughts on today's show and the things we talked about, we would love to hear from you. There are many ways for you to get in touch with us. But if you want to have a discussion, the best place is to go where Floyd was. That's the Babel Conference on Facebook. Matthew, tell everyone a little bit about the Babel Conference.
Well, the Babel Conference is our listeners-only discussion group, which means that only people who listen to the shows know about the group.
That's because we only mention it here on the air.
That is right. We are a closed group on Facebook, which means you just need to click on "Let me in the group," and either Chris, I, or Norm will let you into the group. And it's a great place. I mean, we have fantastic discussions, Chris, about just about everything, from everything we talk about on the 602 Club to everything we talk about on the rest of our shows devoted to something devoted to Star Trek. I mean, it's endless, the discussion. So I have a blast there every single day, and I really do hope that you'll join us there. You're just going to want to go to Facebook, type the Babel Conference search field there.
You can just type B-A-B-E-L, Babel, and it'll come right up.
Yes, yeah. Exactly. You'll pull us right up. Or you can go to our website at trek.fm, and you can hit discussion on the menu bar, and it'll bring you right to our discussion group.
That's right. And it's mostly Star Trek stuff, but as you know, Matthew's other show, The 602 Club, is about everything geek that's not Star Trek. And so we do allow discussions in that group that are not Star Trek related. If you want to talk about topics that Matthew talks about over on his show, like Lord of the Rings or Harry Potter or Spider-Man or comic books or anything like that, right?
Yeah. I mean, we are pretty much covering it all over there, which is fun. And I think what it gives is it does give the Babel Conference a really nice, well-rounded discussion group feel to it, because we do talk about so many different things. And like always, it doesn't matter what we're talking about. Usually, somehow, it comes back to Star Trek.
Right. Yeah, definitely. All right. So please come join us there in the Babel Conference. Now, we do have our main page on Facebook as well, facebook.com/trekfm. That page is maintained by Suzanne Abbott, and she puts out questions there and other things every day. You can find us on Twitter. Our username is trekfm. If you'd like to send us email, we do that through our website. Go to trek.fm/contact. Use the form there. Choose to send to a show and choose the Orb, and that'll come to both Matthew and me by email. And you can even send us a voicemail if you go to speakpipe.com/trekfm. That's the word speak and the word pipe.com/trekfm. You can record just with the mic on your smartphone or your tablet or your computer. Upload it to us right there from the page. Now, Matthew, I already mentioned the 602 Club, so people, they know they can find you there, but where else can people find you?
Well, Chris, not only in the 60 Clue Club, but I do Literary Treks with Dan, where we talk about the books and comics of Star Trek. And so if you'd love to be able to dig into Star Trek even more, and especially the only place to find the Prime Universe these days, we got interview authors as well. It's a lot of fun. So, yeah, you're going to want to hit up Literary Treks. We talk about, again, just books and comics, and actually, Chris, Shar and I actually just did something fun. Our wonderful host from the To the Journey podcast, we talked about Kate Mulgrew's new memoir, Born with Teeth, which was a lot of fun. So, yeah, we do a little bit of everything over there, and I hope you'll join me.
Yeah. Stay tuned for my own memoirs, Born Without Teeth.
Oh, well.
It's not very special.
Yeah. I'm normal, is what you're saying.
Right, exactly. Yeah. Yeah, you have a lot of... You've had so many authors coming up. In fact, I think right after this, Dayton is hopping on with you, isn't he?
Well, Chris, I'm very excited. Yeah, right after we record this, me and Dan are going to be talking to Dayton Ward about his latest book. So I'm very excited about that. Yeah, and you'll definitely want to check that out. And then, of course, Chris, you can find me on Twitter at MattRushing02. You can also find me on my own personal blog at 42lifeinbetween.wordpress.com. Now, Chris, when you're not trying to figure out exactly which episodes of Deep Space Nine that you just want to dive into today, where can we find you?
Well, you can find me elsewhere on the network here doing the Ready Room, which, again, is a little bit infrequent these days because of my schedule, which I mentioned up at the top of the show, but I am trying to find a way to get that back to being weekly. I occasionally record a hyper channel if there's something interesting to talk about in the news, and of course, I still help Alec and Rob out with Axanar, not on the air, but behind the scenes, helping them put that show together. And then on Twitter, you can find me at C. Brian Jones, letter C, and Brian with a Y. I'm also on Facebook with that same username. You can find me there in the Babel Conference. And also, I have my own website, cbrianjones.com, if you'd like to pop over there and see what I'm talking about that's usually not related to Star Trek. All right. Well, thank you, everyone, for all the great mail today. And Matthew, I'm glad we got to record an episode together. And we're going to do that again really soon and get the orb back on track.
Chris, it was wonderful to be with you tonight. And thank you, everyone, for listening. And join us again next time as we gaze into the orb.
Recording. The orb of mail pants. You unzip them and mail pours out.
That just sounds... I'm just feeling a little pain right now, Chris. Like, ow.
Ow, I know, right? It's kind of uncomfortable, but...
It sounds like it was just really full in there and... Woo, got to get that out.
Yeah, a little bit backed up with mail.
Backed up with the mail. Yeah, that's awesome.
All right. Okay, so let me lead us into this. Okay.